Welcome, everybody, to another installment of the Family Learning. Today, we'd like to learn the sugya, the discussion in the Gemara and beyond of the fascinating world of Minhagim. Before we do that, I'd like to thank all those who made today's shiur and event possible. First and foremost, thank you to the Jessen family for sponsoring the shiur. In honor of the recent birthdays, October 20th and 21st, respectively, of David and Shimmy, and we look forward to seeing them as well as many of the other parents and families who are visiting in the upcoming months. Thank you to Ami Hill, to David Jessen, and to Jordan Lussman for organizing it on our end. The first question that I'd like to ask, that we'd like to learn together when discussing the topic of the fascinating world of Minhagim, is where do Minhagim originate from? This goes all the way back in the first of the Makoros, the first of the sources on your source sheet, the Pasuk in Parsha Shoftim. The Pasuk is telling us in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, you must listen to the Beis Din, you have to listen to the Grand Court, and if you don't, it's a violation of what's called Lo Tasur, of going astray from what the rabbis tell you to do, of straying from what the Chachamim tell us. Minhagim that are binding and preserved are only those made prior to the final editing job of the Gemara. When the Talmud was edited, so only those minhagim, only those customs that were added before and were developed before the closing editing job of the Gemara are binding. That's generally speaking. Those are for most of the customs that we have in the present day. Of course, there are exceptions. One of those most notable exceptions, as we learn through the history of Minhagim and a bunch of various Minhagim, which is the second subtopic of today's shiur, one of those is the custom of abstaining from eating kitniot on Pesach. During the days of the Rishonim, the year 1000, 1050, 1100, in those years, it bothered many of the Rishonim that the Gemara never prohibited eating kitniot on Pesach. Why? Because, as they noted, in the field, rice was planted close to wheat and close to leavened products. So if you're going to have rice, well, the rice might have touched some wheat, it might have touched some barley. We don't want to come into the problem of eating chametz on Pesach, which is a very grave and serious and severe prohibition. The Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, in the second of the sources, Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel. So the Rambam divides up categories of concepts, right, and concepts of Torah Shebaal Peh, and whether they are subject to arguments. We know that there are seven major, in generally speaking, there are seven major or eight major concepts within Torah Shebaal Peh. The idea of Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, the idea of Perish HaMakubo Mi-Sinai, things that are from the Torah, things that are from the rabbis, and then there are Minhagim, and then there are customs. Customs are subject to argument. Customs are also, within the concepts of Torah Shebaal Peh, customs are under the, and are subsumed under the topic of Gzeirot V'Takano, are subsumed under the topic of, under the category rather, of decrees and establishments and institutions made by our rabbis. In the sense that if there's a disagreement within the community, whether a minhag should be preserved or let go, we follow the majority. The Pasuk tells us in Sefer Shmos, Parsha Mishpatim, Acharei Rabim Lahatos. You follow the majority. You go following the majority. So the same thing, please turn it so that everybody could see their wonderful children enjoying. We follow the majority. The Gemara in Psachim tells us on the third of the source sheets, the Gemara in Psachim, Daf Nun Amud Beis, right, beginning with the words B'nei Baishan, that the people of Baishan, the community of Baishan, the people of Baishan had a minhag. They had a custom not to travel on Friday from the city of Tzur to Tzidon. Why? So Rashi points out on that Gemara, the Gemara also explains, Rashi points out on that Gemara, beyond what we gave on the source sheets, that one shouldn't travel from one city to the other late Friday afternoon so as not to infringe on Kavod Shabbos. so as not to impact one's Shabbos preparations. One should have enough time to prepare on Shabbos, so you shouldn't travel at 4 o'clock on a winter Friday. It's unclear from this Gemara whether that applies. I'm sorry. First, the Gemara quotes the pasuk of Shma b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh torati mecha. Not to stray from your father and mother's minhagim. To listen to your father, to adhere to what your father has to say. And we're going to see the difference in our last subtopic, in our last element of the shir in a few moments. But not to stray, right? What the difference is between father and mother. Rav Moshe's tshuva, which is on the second side of your source sheet. But we learn from that pasuk. It's unclear if that pasuk refers from not straying from family custom or not straying from community custom. What does that refer to? And we'll discuss the differences between family and community minhagim in a few minutes. Moving right along, our fourth source. The fourth source on your source sheet, the Gemara in Nedarim. The Gemara in Nedarim on Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph. The fourth of your source sheets, Ravina Amar. Ravina says, Li olam kidekatani. I only gave a piece of each Gemara, but I'd like to explain. This is, the Gemara in Nedarim is talking about a different form, and a very different form, than what we're used to in terms of the development of Minhagim. We're used to family Minhagim. We're used to, as we'll discuss in a few minutes, we have three classic examples of Minhagim that have been throughout the ages. Right? Nusach HaTfilah, Shofar Blast on Rosh Hashanah, public Sukkot and Megillah reading. We discussed even abstaining from eating legume and bean products, even abstaining from eating kidneyot on Pesach. The Gemara in Nedarim is discussing the form of what's called minhag mitam neder. A quick background. A minhag mitam neder means the following. The Gemara says, the Gemara is discussing about possibly violating a promise or a vow. And these vows are physical, gashmiut vows. You made a vow not to sleep. You made a vow not to eat. All of these vows. So if you made that and you violate that vow, and you sleep or you eat when you said that you weren't going to, you violate the biblical prohibition. You could see it on your first line of the two-line excerpt from the Gemara Nedarim. You violate the prohibition of Baal Yachel Devaro. Anybody who has the Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Parshas Matos, Baal Yachel Devaro, of not keeping to your word. Lo Yachel Devaro. There's also a possibility that you will violate the prohibition on a rabbinic level, the Gemara says, when you permit things that others have prohibited. The Gemara says, the Hatanya, Devarim Hamutarin, Vacherim Nagu Bahen Isser, I Ata Rashai Lahatiran Bifnehem. Simple translation is, anything that many people were matir, anything that many people permitted. V'acherim, and there were others who had the minhag. The Gemara is emphasizing that a minhag is a very strong idea, right? It's a very strong concept. What we know as, we're not really going to discuss this so much tonight, but the idea of minhag kahalacha, that a minhag is so strong that it's as if, in some cases, it really is equated with keeping the letter of the law, of keeping the halacha. But the Gemara says that in other people prohibit they have a custom to prohibit this physical or spiritual idea. It's efshar, or it's iata rasha la'atiron b'fneihem. In front of them, you are not allowed to permit it. In front of them, if somebody prohibits things, and it goes, it could by community, it could even go within a family. Most of the family, or the father of the family, has a minhag from his father and his father and his father not to do something. In front of the father, in front of the rabbi of the shul, in front of the community, the lay leadership of the shul, it is usher, it is prohibited to allow such a practice. We know that minhagim, though, are not on the same level as mitzvos. Right? First, we know that it might only be a violation from the rabbis, this Gemara in Nedarim, of Minog Mitam Neder. You vowed to do something. So the custom is you're supposed to keep it. So the Gemara says that there's a difference between a Dvar Mitzvah, something that's obligatory, according to the Torah, according to the rabbis, and something that's a Dvar Rishus, and something that is optional. We know, though, that Minhagim, as we had alluded to before, Minhagim are not on the same level as mitzvos. They're not on the same level as halacha, which is why we are told by Chazal that minhag kehalacha, that the highest level you can get to of a minhag, of a custom, is that it's similar to halacha. It's like halacha. It's not exactly halacha. It's not on the exact same level. Which is why, on the next of the Ma'ir Makomos, the fifth and final within the origin and development and background of minhagim, Tosfos in Maseches Sukkah, Daf Mem Daled Amud Beis, tells us in Kan B'Migdash, Kan B'Gvulin. There's a whole discussion in the Tosfos. We're not going to read it inside. There's a whole discussion in the Tosfos whether, and the Gemara there in Sukkah Daf Mem Daled Amud Beis is discussing the minhag of taking the Arava on Sukkahs, on the holiday of Sukkahs. It tells us. Tosfos holds that we do make a bracha on a minhag. Right? This would mean that you, again, Tosfos and the Rambam disagree. We'll explain the machlokas in a second. But maybe because by minhagim, by customs, you can't say vitzivanu, you can't say you were commanded, even though the original source, our first source that we mentioned was from, right, that minhagim have their origin in lo sasur, in lo tasur, in not straying from the chachamim, Parsha Shoftim, not straying from the Bez Din HaGadol, not straying from the highest court in Yerushalayim, since you can't say Vitzivanu Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvosav, it's not a mitzvah. Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvosav Vitzivanu, since that's off limits, you can't make a bracha on a minhag. This is the general discussion of whether you make brachos on minhagim. According to the Rambam, no. According to the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says we don't recite a bracha on Minhagim. According to Tosfos, Tosfos' opinion was that we do. According to the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos, which you don't have in front of you, but the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Tezayin, disagrees. Says the Rambam explains we do not recite a bracha on Minhagim. The example that's given in Tosfos and Sukkah, you can look back up to that Tosfos and Sukkah, Mem Daled Amud Beis. Tosfos gives the example of reciting a bracha on Hallel that we sing on Rosh Chodesh. We have a dispute whether Minhagim are included in the category of Lotasur. Is it just like the Gemara in Psachim, right, the B'nai Baishan, not to travel far distances or even considerable distances on Erev Shabbos, on Friday afternoon close to Shabbos, so as not to infringe on taking care of your Shabbos needs? And there the Gemara quoted, Shema B'ni Musar Avicha, many wonderful songs coming from that, but now's not time for Niggun of the Week. Shema B'ni Musar Avicha V'alti Tosh Torah Simecha. Shema B'ni Musar Avicha V'alti Tosh Torah Simecha. But if you learn it from Lo Sussur, it has an even further, right, because Shema B'ni is a pasuk from Mishle. So if you learn it from Lo Tasur, that means that you learn it from not violating the Chachamim, as opposed to just a positive commandment of listening to your father and mother, which might also mean, let's further break it down, it might also mean that Shema B'ni Musar Avicha is just the B'nai Baishan, and by extension, the Melman family, the Eagle family, and every other family. The Jessen family, of course. It might just be family minhagim. Or, do you say, Lo Tasur is a broader description of following minhagim? Those are minhagim that are communal minhagim. Minhagim that even go beyond the community. So we have a dispute. So far we've done where the minhagim come from, that we have two different psukim. One in the Torah, and one in Ksuvim, and one in Mishle. And then we discussed a couple of different forms of minhagim that come from vows and promises that you make. We discussed whether to make a bracha on a minhag, because minhagim don't have vitzivanu. They're not a mitzvah, they're not a commandment. The difference between minhagim and mitzvot. And now I'd like to discuss perhaps the most interesting part of the shiur, now that we know the background, of different minhagim that we are all familiar with. Various minhagim, which is how it's listed on the source sheet. Towards the bottom of the first side, let's discuss and delve into different prevalent minhagim that we have nowadays. So the first on the source sheet is Nusach HaTfilah. The form, the text, the format of the tefillah, Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Sfard, certain insertions that we either leave out or insert. So the Yerushalmi tells us in Maseches Erevin, Perek Gimel Halacha Tes, the Yerushalmi was broken up, unlike the Bavli, it's very different in terms of its format, it was broken up based on different halachot. The Yerushalmi tells us, even though we've given you the Biyosi Mishlach Ksiv Lahon, Af Al Pi Shekosvu Lachem Sidre Moados, Al Tishanu Minog Avoseichem Nochai Nefesh. In simple English, the Yerushalmi and Erevin is telling us, even though we've given you a new siddur, a new Sefer HaTfilos, or a Sefer HaMoados, it's important not to change from your ancestors' minhagim, and for that matter, Nusach, and here, Nusach HaTfilah. Right, the text and the format of the tefillah. There's an obligation to daven in the same Nusach as your father. We're getting closer to discussing family minhagim and when a husband and wife have disputes from their original family minhagim. There's an obligation to daven in the same nusach as your father and grandfather. There is a dispute between the Pri Chadash and others whether this means not to change minhagim of your father's hometown or shul, or the place is irrelevant, it just means not to change the nusach of your ancestors no matter where you find yourselves. So again, a question of whether you're not changing from your father's hometown. You grew up in Teaneck. You grew up in Silver Spring or Denver or Cleveland. We can't get to everybody today, but you grew up in whatever community it is. Does it mean that you're not supposed to change the minhag from your hometown? And then you left many years later. We're going to discuss also the difference between, right, if where you go to yeshiva and you spend considerable amount of years there, and they have separate minhagim, what you do if your family has other minhagim. Or the place is irrelevant, it just means not to change the nusach of your ancestors, no matter where you find yourselves. You are all over the place. No, but your ancestors came from Eastern Europe, they had certain standards in their minhagim. You should adhere to those standards. The Magen Avraham, one of our halachic commentators, and the Pri Megadim, another one as well, explain that it means that you should not change your nusach from Ashkenaz to Sfard and vice versa. We do not have this in front of us, but take my word for it. This is what the Magen Avraham says, not to change from nusach Ashkenaz or nusach Sfard. That's what not changing, in terms of nusach HaTfilah, that's what it means, not changing minhagim and not changing nusach. There is another understanding as well, that the source for keeping minhagim as they are, not that you're not supposed to veer from the path, stray from the path of the Chachamim, of the Beis Din HaGadol, which was our first source, but to adhere to minhagim and preserve them was Shema Bani Musar Avicha. We've mentioned a couple of times in today's shir, Al Titosh, right? Shema Bani Musar Avicha V'Al Titosh Torati Mecha. So there's another understanding. If that's the source, Shema Bani Musar Avicha, that doesn't apply to customs which don't have a prohibition, don't have an isur attached to them. And a previous example of a minog, of a custom which had a prohibition attached to them, is making sure, having every precaution there necessary to make sure for the Bnei Baishan, the Gemara earlier in Psachim, not to, on the third of your source sheets, not to travel close to Shabbos. Shabbos is one of our most precious mitzvot that we have. Not to violate Shabbos. Not a prohibition from the Torah, not a prohibition from the rabbis. And we will go to the nth degree, we will make sure, and minhagim have come from this, not to travel close to Shabbos because of that. So maybe that's what it means. that it only refers to those that have, right? It only refers to those customs that have a prohibition attached to it, but not those, right, that don't. Only to those that would infringe on Shabbos, for example, but not those that just mean, let's say, Nusach HaTfilah, which is, in our best estimation, a neutral minhag. He davens Ashkenaz, I daven Sfard, now I join his family, or I come from that family, but I go to a community which davens Ashkenaz and I'm Sfard, make sure not to stray from that minhag, to preserve that minhag. I'll titosh Torati Mecha. Okay? That's Nusach HaTfilah. Our second prevalent minhag is the second source on the various minhagim subtopic, the last source on the first side of the source sheet. That's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Dalet. This is familiar from a few short months ago. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Dalet, quotes that Rabbi Abahu, one of our Amoraim, established in Caesarea, which is famous these days for concerts, but Rabbi Abahu established in Caesarea that we have to blow both the Shvarim and Trua three times each. Since people, Rabbi Abahu said that since people hadn't heard shofar blasts in a while, it used to be a call to arms. It was a time for battle then. And it was very strenuous and tragic times prior to Rabbi Abahu. So Rabbi Abahu established that we should blow all the permutations in our synagogues, in our shuls. We should make sure that we blow all permutations. Don't just blow one. Don't just blow the tekiah. Make sure that you blow the shvarim and trua. And Rabbi Abahu said, by extension, since we don't know which is right. Whether the correct shofar blast is the shorter shvarim, or the longer trua, or the longer but shorter shvarim blast, the three shorter blasts, or the very short but longer in number of nine very short blasts of the trua, so we have to blow all permutations, and we have to blow a combination, and each one, the Gemara says, has to be preceded by a tekiah. Before it, a tekiah lefaneha and a tekiah la'achareha. So you get from three, you get from one to three to nine, and then by extension, they got to 100. Where do we get to 100 from? And Tosfos, in Rosh Hashanah, which you do not have in front of you, again, please take my word for it, Tosfos on that Gemara, Rosh Hashanah 33b, Lamed Gimel Lamed Bet, Dibur HaMaschil, the starting verse is Shir. Tosfos say that we got to 100 based on, from 30 to 100, based on Devorah's victory. Devorah HaNeviah, Devorah the prophetess, over Sisra, the evil warrior from Canaan, and how Sisra's mother cried 100 times, it ended up being in vain, but cried 100 times worrying about her little Sisra, worrying about her son Sisra, whether her son would return safely from battle, whether he could survive the battle. Specifically on Rosh Hashanah, a day where we try to arouse Hashem's rachamim, and where it's appropriate, some say that from here you learn, it's appropriate to cry on Rosh Hashanah, because that's what the shofar blasts represent. That's why we're going from 9 to 30 to 100. The biblical commandment is 9. The rabbinic addition is 30. We got from 30 to 100, that's the minhag. From Torah to rabbis to minhag. The custom goes from 9 to 30 to 100. You see the progression. It's interesting that we use the cries of cruelty of Sisra to arouse the cries of mercy to God on Rosh Hashanah, but this is all mentioned in Tosos in terms of the progression from 9 to 30 to 100. And finally, in terms of the third of the prevalent minhagim, the Ramah, flip over to the other side, all who are with us, flip over to the second side of the source sheet, the public psukim of Megillah reading, the Ramah in Orach Chaim. In the first section of the four sections of Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah tells us, in Siman Tuf Reish Tzadi, in 690, the Rama tells us, Se'if Yud Zayin, subchapter 17, the Rama tells us, there's a widespread minhag for the congregation when it comes to Megillah reading, Kriyas HaMegillah. Megillah reading in shul is a widespread custom for the congregation, lest we think that it's a law, it's a custom. The Rama says, Minhag Kol Yisrael, Shehakore, Kore Uposhet Ki Geres, and then goes on and says, Hagad, Rama says, so that as I read, was the Shulchan Aruch talking. But the Rama says, Yesh Shekasru Shenoagin Lomar, Arba Psukim Shel Geula, Arba Psukim Shel Geula B'Kol Ram. We have the Minhag, there are those who write, we have the Minhag, for the entire congregation, the entire Tzibur, to recite the four psukim, the four verses of redemption, the four psukim of Geula, aloud, right? Together with the Baal Kore's reading, during the Baal Kore's reading, before, after, during the Baal Kore's reading, right? The Baal Kore will stop, so I guess before, and the congregation will join in at each of the four psukim. So we see, right, we're familiar with minhagim, and minhagim that involve entire communities. This is a different minhag. Why is this a different minhag? We've explained so far what the issues are with every single minhag that we have discussed. Why? What is the issue with this minhag? We never have a time in shul or privately, in family minhagim or communal minhagim, where we have customs where we've already done them, and now the custom is to repeat that minhag. Never. And when it comes to public psukim of Megillah reading, the nuance here is that there's a, what we would call in Talmudic terminology, a hidur mitzvah, a beautifying of a mitzvah, adding to the mitzvah that we already did. The Baal Kore already performed the mitzvah of reading the Megillah. The Baal Kore already performed it. Why do we need the congregation to repeat it? So the reason why we need it to repeat it is because the entire purpose of Kriyat HaMegillah, of reading the Megillah in shul, at night and during the day, is for Persumei Nisa, a concept which is familiar to us from Chanukah lighting. In a few short weeks, it's crazy, this year is flying by, but in a few short weeks, that's the idea of the Chanukah menorah. Persumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle. We all get together for Chanukah parties. Do it at a time, all families should do it at a time, when you're right after, during and right after, when you're lighting the menorah. That's Persumei Nisa. The same thing by reading the Megillah. Persumei Nisa trumps the idea, it beats the idea of the problem of adding to something we already did. We never have minhagim where we already did the mitzvah, and now comes the minhag. Why are we doing it twice? We're doing it twice for Persumei Nisa. That's not affected by the issue of repeating a mitzvah in a more beautiful fashion. So far, so good. We move on now to the third and final subtopic of our shiur. What are some issues surrounding minhagim? I'd like to discuss four issues. The first is the Gemara in Psachim, the second source on the second side of the source sheet. It's actually the Mishnah in Psachim, which has our title track in its title track. The fascinating world of Minhagim, everything you need to know about Minhagim, the Perek, the chapter in the fourth chapter of the Mishnayot and Gemara in Psachim begins, Makom Shenahagu. Makom Shenahagu, the Mishnah says, La'asot Malacha Ba'arvei Psachim, Ad Chatzot Osin. In a place where they had a minhag to do malacha, to do forbidden labor, which would otherwise be forbidden on a yontif. Why are they discussing on an erev chag? Because there are two erev chagim, which have a special added element of they are like the yom tovim. One is erev Pesach, and the other is erev Yom Kippur. Erev Pesach. So in a place where they would do the malacha on, right, where they had the minhag, they had the custom to do a malacha on Erev Pesach until Chatzot, do it. And the place where they didn't, don't do it. The Gemara tells the story of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, who went from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. He went from Israel to Babylonia, and he originally ate something which was forbidden in Babel, but was permitted in Eretz Yisrael. Right? He ate a forbidden fat, chelev, which is forbidden in Babel, but happened to have been, the Torah mentions it, yeah, also, but the minog was that it was forbidden it was forbidden in Babel, right? But was permitted in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara concludes that he was able to do this. Why? Because Rabba Bar Bar Chana was what we would call in Minhag terminology, he was Da'ato Lachzor. Da'ato Lachzor. He had in mind to return to the city where it was permitted. Okay? It was permitted in Eretz Yisrael. He was coming back to Israel. He was going to return to Israel. So it was permitted. So the Gemara says there that if you go, right, anyone who is Daito Lachsor, who's Daito Lachsor, anybody who plans to return, observes the Minhagim of the place from which he departed. And if you're Ein Daito Lachsor, so you observe, if you're not planning on returning, you observe your new community's minhagim. You observe your new community's minhagim. Which makes sense, according to the Mishnah, according to the Gemara in Maseches Psachim. The Gemara just says by extension, if you're Ein Daito Lachzor, if you're not planning on returning, so the Gemara says you observe the minhagim of your new home, which we had mentioned, even the leniencies, the afilu lekula, even the kulas, even the leniencies of that place. The Maharam Shik, which you do not have in front of you, the source, the Maharam Shik says in his responsa, Maharam Shik was a Hungarian rabbi, community rabbi, who wrote many, many responsa, who was from Hungary in the 1800s, a Hungarian rabbi. So the Maharam Shik, we should always, and I always tell the boys, it's important to know the background of the Rishonim and Achronim, which we're learning. The Maharam Shik says, he deals with the issue of a yeshiva student who does what? Who has stricter minhagim at home, ironically enough, has stricter minhagim at home and more lenient minhagim, which he developed in yeshiva. And, for example, this student is in the yeshiva for a number of years. He's not just there for 1 year or 2 years. He's there for many years. So what do we follow? The Maharam Shik says, you have to be stringent and follow the stricter minhagim. Follow the home. Follow where you come from. You follow the stricter minhagim because in this instance, the yeshiva student, in his case, the Maharam Shik's responsa that he wrote up, and in many other cases, the yeshiva student is not staying in yeshiva forever. He's coming home. And you know what? Eventually, God willing, he's going to get married, he's going to start his own family, but he'll continue those, he'll preserve. Al titosh torati necha, like we quoted earlier, he'll continue the minhagim from where he came. He'll eventually return home, and then maybe he'll go to a new community, he'll continue the minhagim where he came. Issue number two that comes up with minhagim is Rav Moshe. Yeah, Kobe.
Question. How do you do that with the whole idea of the yeshiva waits less than 6 hours? And tells people that, if you wait 6 hours, you can just follow.
So the answer, according to the Maharam Shik and many others, is while you're in yeshiva, you could follow that psak, you could follow that conclusive decision. When you go home, also you're not in, when you go back to your communities, so you're also not, in that particular question, in that particular halachic case, you are not in the same setup. You don't have the same yeshiva schedule. Right, that's local to the yeshiva schedule. So those are actually two reasons why you wouldn't preserve that. Good question, Kobe. Second case, second issue is Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe and Igros Moshe discuss something that we can all relate to in Orach Chaim, Chelek Aleph, in response to 158, Kuf Nun Chet. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Hador, the greatest of the previous generation, lived in the entire 1900s, passed away, Tanis Esther of 1986. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, if a husband and wife have different minhagim, from the communities where they came from, different family minhagim, the wife has to follow the husband's minhagim. Why? Rav Moshe explains, this is, as we say, bein l'chumra, bein lekula, whether stringent or lenient, she has to follow her husband. Because a woman, halachically speaking, after she gets married, is, as far as halachot and minhagim go, she's in her husband's domain, which the Gemara in Ksubos tells us, this obligation is min haTorah, it's from the Torah, quotes verses from the Torah, psukim from the Torah, that mention this, and says, when does this following the husband take effect? Once she leaves her father's house, which the Gemara in Kiddushin, which you don't have on your Marim Makomos, you don't have on your source sheet, but the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, tells us this infringes, this poses a problem on the obligation of Kibud Av Va'em. Kibud Av, if the father asks her to do something, but she's married, and then her husband comes, she has to follow her husband. That's straight from the Talmud, straight from the Gemara in Kiddushin. This is even better than Ein Daito Lachzor. This is even better. The husband and wife case from Rav Moshe Feinstein is even a clearer example than not returning home. Why? Because not only won't she be returning to her hometown, but there's precedent, as we mentioned, in two Gemaras in Shas. There's precedent from the Gemara in Kiddushin when it clashes with Kibud Av Va'em. There's the mention, the source from the Gemara in Ksubos, where the Gemara tells us that this takes effect the moment that she leaves her father's house. There's precedent for her following her husband in everything he does. The case that Rav Moshe is discussing is the case of eating rice on Pesach. Let's say the husband does, the wife doesn't. So Rav Moshe says that she has to follow her husband. And it's categorized as, this should sound familiar from a couple of minutes ago, as Ein Daita Lachzor, as Ein Da'ata Lachzor. She is not returning home. She's not returning to her family. Her husband's minhagim are her new family minhagim. There's a discussion whether the minhag not to eat kitnios on Pesach, right, followed by B'nai Ashkenaz, it's considered a local custom, what we would know as a minhag hamakom, or it's a broader minhag that should be followed. It's a minhag ha'eda, which is the term used when you want to distinguish between local minhagim and communal minhagim, or even beyond communal minhagim. Minhag ha'eda, the broader minhagim, are obviously much stronger. It's a question, it's an open-ended question, what to classify this minhag and many of these family minhagim into, what category to place them into. But just so we should be exposed, as I always tell the boys, we should be exposed to the many issues of a sugya, of a given topic with its many sources, it's important to be exposed to this distinction. Family minhagim versus communal minhagim, and maybe even beyond communal minhagim. Our third and second to last issue is the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi in Bava Metzia, which tells us, Perek Vav Halacha Aleph, that's the last of the sources, and then just one brief discussion at the end. But the Yerushalmi is discussing one who hires workers and instructs them to arrive early to work, something we can all relate to. It's a mundane example, but it's mentioned as a minhag. A couple of the Shana Bet boys, who are here, so all of them learned this last year. We've been learning Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and Bava Basra. So we're up to Bava Basra in our Gemara studies in the morning, afternoon, and evening here in Yeshiva. But a number of the boys are finding this familiar. Maybe they didn't learn Yerushalmi, but they definitely learned this in Asochar Sapolim, Asochar Sa'umnin, really, where the Bavli also discusses this. One who hires workers, which is the sixth parak of Bava Metzia, as we all remember. One who hires workers and instructs them to arrive extra early to work and leave extra late in a place where that's not the minhag, so the employer cannot force his workers to do so. You're in a place where it's not done, so it's not when in Rome. No, we don't force the workers to do so. This tells you that the minhag cancels out the halacha. So here there's an argument between the employer and employee as to whether the employee has to arrive at work by a certain hour, and stay until a certain late hour, stay until a certain time. We follow the minhag hamakom. You follow what goes on in that city, what goes on in that place, right? What they do in that city, or for that matter, that state laws, state customs. Based on the minhag hamakom, we can force the employer to give the employee money, since we know the minhag hamakom is not to make the worker begin his day early enough or stay that late. This beats out the halacha of not being able to take money from somebody who is entitled to it, somebody who has an authoritative possession, what we would call in last year's Masechta Shlomo and Kobi and others, Bav Metzia, what we would call the Beis Med Aleph, Muchzak, somebody who has authoritative possession. I remember learning this with Kobi in the shul in Har Nof right after the tragic attack. We came and we learned the morning seder. We came back a few days later. It was a very special morning seder. We learned that, and that's what we were learning about. Morning seder, we were learning the first daf of Bava Metzia. But that's where workers comp, and that's where workers custom. In a very mundane, relatable example, outside of the realm of halacha, you see also something very interesting. Before our last 2 minutes, we wrap up the whole sugya and our whole shiur tonight, you see that Torah is enduring and everlasting. Everything is discussed in the Torah and beyond. Everything. The Mishnah says in Avot, just a plug for our holy Torah, not that we actually need it, but you see something like this tucked away in the Yerushalmi and Bava Metzia. In the sixth chapter of the Yerushalmi, we're told about how, you know, employer and employee relationships, very sophisticated laws, really stream together perfectly with Torah and the Talmud and the Yerushalmi, etc. Finally, the Gemara in Yevamos, you'll bear with me for a second, the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Yedalet, in the first parak of Maseches Yevamos, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Parshat Re'eh, from Sefer Dvarim, lo titgodadu, lo sisgodadu, not to make, and the Gemara explains there on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, lo ta'asu agudot agudot, lo sa'asu agudos agudos, not to make different groups. You can't have different groups within one community following different practices and different, right? Following different practices. This is the glaring question some of us and more of the boys are going to be learning Megillah as it gets closer to Purim. Many start after Hanukkah. Many of the boys, the yeshiva minhag, as we've been discussing all night, yeshiva minhag, to prepare. That is the glaring question, the opening question of the Gemara. Megillah nikreis, the Megillah is read on the 11th of Adar, the 12th of Adar, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvav, Lo Pachos, Velo Yosir. Not earlier than the 11th, not later than the 15th. And the glaring question is, you can't get by the opening line of Megillah without getting by this question and this issue. That violates Lo Siskodadu. That violates, if you've learned Megillah and you haven't asked yourself this question, now's the time. That violates Lo Tasu Agudo Agudo. Not to get into different groups, and some are reading on the 11th, some are reading on the 12th, the 13th, etc. It's eye-opening if you haven't thought of this issue. But that's the glaring question there. Rashi, back to Yevamos, Yud Gimel Amud Beis, which is the source in the Gemara of Lo Siskodadu. Rashi in Yevamos tells us that it's a problem because it looks like we're following two different Torahs. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Yud Dalid, the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah says that different groups following different minhagim, we're done in a minute. We conclude with this, different groups following different minhagim within one community will cause machlokes. We don't want to cause machlokes. It reminds us of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Daled, we learned today. We learned so much today, but we learned with, right, Rabbi Abbo, that he wanted to avoid machlokes, wanted to avoid arguments in Klal Yisrael, in Am Yisrael. The same over here. The whole point is not to separate into different groups and follow different customs. But there's a question whether this applies to the food for thought, is whether this applies to minhagim, to customs, in addition to mitzvot and isurim, in addition to actual prohibitions. There's also a discussion whether lo siskodadu, applies to rulings from one Beit Din, we've really come full circle tonight. We've discussed avoiding machloket, which is important in all areas of life, but we've also come full circle with whether Lo Siskodidu includes following one Beis Din or two Batei Dinim, two courts, which is where we started for the source of Minhagim, right? Of following, listening to the Beis Din HaGadol, listening to the grand court in Yerushalayim Yerakodesh. Right? For example, the problem of having one minyan on Chol HaMoed, where some men are wearing tefillin and some aren't, and in different places, in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz La'aretz. To conclude, it sounds like it's a little strong, but to conclude, thank you for joining us, to conclude, Rabbeinu Tam says, it's mentioned in the Gemara also, Rabbeinu Tam and Chazal say, with minhagim, you have to be careful. With customs, you have to be careful. Don't just take on every little custom. Examine it. Use some of the examples that we mentioned tonight and a lot of the guidelines, because if you switch around, oy vavoy, if you switch around the letters of minhag, you get gehenim. Not on that note. Your boys are doing wonderfully. We enjoyed learning together. Everybody have a wonderful day, week. We look forward to seeing and interacting with all of you soon. Thank you so much. Let him do it. What are you pulling shtick for?